The first number on this Wall Ride program on the Grand Ole Opry will be Little Maggie. Bill and Earl will do it.
Come along and join Lisanne DuPont at the legendary Ryman Auditorium. Revered as the mother church of country music, the Ryman has been an anchor of the Nashville music scene for more than a century. The Grand Ole Opry moved into the Ryman back in 1943, and it broadcast weekly shows across the airwaves on WSM 650 AM radio. Even though the Opry outgrew the Ryman in the 1970s, the legendary show returns for winter broadcasts every November through January. From Hank Williams to Flattin' Scruggs, Chet Atkins, Dolly Parton, Emmylou Harris, Johnny Cash, to Patsy Cline and Bob Hope, the list of luminaries who have performed at the Ryman, a National Historic Landmark, is a literal who's who of the American music scene.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
Nearby in downtown Nashville is the Johnny Cash Museum, with an adjunct Patsy Cline Museum scheduled to join the limelight in late fall 2016. After our visit to the Ryman, we'll join Angela Dodson, Director of Marketing, for an insider's look at the Johnny Cash Museum and its world-class collection of ephemera. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer.
The Flattin' Scruggs Grand Ole Opry Show, brought to you by Martha White Mills, millers of Martha White Hot Rise Flour, cornmeal and cake mixes, and pet milk.
Lisa Ann DuPont at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville, Tennessee. This is like Mecca. This really is. This is cool.
Yeah, it's the coolest.
Let's go back in time, the history of the Ryman. It's been a part, an integral part of Nashville. 100 years or so?
124 years. Wow. So we hit 125 next year, which is super, super exciting. So we're sitting here right now in the pews on our lower level. And if you look around, everyone says, well, it looks like a church. Well, it's because the building did open as a church originally. So in 1892, it opened as the Union Gospel Tabernacle. It remained under that name until about 1904, when Tom Ryman, who was the man that built this beautiful building for us, passed away. And actually at his funeral right there, I mean, I could see the spot from here, the preacher stood up and asked, you know, does everyone think that this building should be renamed in Captain Tom's honor? And about 4,000 people stood up.
Wow.
So it gives me chills every time because it happened right there. So it is now the Ryman Auditorium.
From the turn of the 20th century, the beginning, all the way through most of the 20th, it was, again, Mecca. Tell us about some of the incredible performers who came and performed here, even the early days of the 20th century.
Yeah, there's some really interesting performers in those early days. And you think of this place has really always been, and I hope will continue to be for the next 125 years, a sort of cultural epicenter for the city. It's where not only you want to see a show, it's where performers want to play. So it's really from both sides of the pews, I like to say. But those early years, there was everyone from Houdini has been on stage here to Charlie Chaplin, Katharine Hepburn. At one point, even, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Helen Keller and Anne Sullivan.
Wow, incredible.
Think about that.
Yeah.
And there's been politicians and presentations about early explorations in Antarctica. And everything you can think of has happened in this building in those early years, sort of very formative. And then we get to 1943, which is when the Grand Ole Opry came in to be.
That's incredible, right? In the midst of World War II. And then grew where it became nationwide in the sense from on the radio waves. Tell us about that.
Yeah. The Grand Ole Opry came here in 1943, and a lot of people think of this as the original home of the Opry, but it's not, actually. It's the fifth home of the Opry, its most famous former home. But they came in 1943 for all those Saturday nights. They booked up so they could broadcast from here. And if you think about those early years, you had Hank Williams, Little Jimmy Dickens, Minnie Pearl, Roy Acuff. And then moving on a little bit in time, you got Loretta Lynn and Dolly Parton and Johnny Cash. And Patsy Cline was inducted into the Opry here. So really, really incredible years.
And that really was what etched the Grand Ole Opry and the Ryman and Nashville into the minds of people across America.
Definitely, and I think it brought all those artists as well to a national forefront because they were on the radio every Saturday night. There they were. And it brought this building to a national platform, and the radio show expanded as well.
And then, like so many things that are old and surviving through the 20th century, this place eventually closed. What happened?
Yeah, in 1974, the Opry, as it continued to grow, and it does today, it's an incredible show that still is going, they needed a bigger location, so they moved to what we now call the new Grand Ole Opry House, even though now they've been there longer than they were here. And this building went dark for about 20 years. It really... It sat nearly empty. There were some semblance of daytime tours, nothing like what you see now. Intermittent shows would happen, but there was a very good possibility at the time that the Ryman would not survive.
It didn't. There was a groundswell of support. And as I understand from the myth and legend, it was one female musician who decided to record live here, and that propelled things. Tell us that story.
Definitely. That definitely helped what was going on. It was Emmylou Harris in 1991 recorded her famous record, Live at the Ryman.
Should go astray back in the years with all together around the place we'd romp and play so lonely now.
That, along with, you know, there was also a groundswell to make this a National Historic Landmark and all these things, but Emmylou, you know, really rallied artists together to bring that to the forefront.
So if that one musician, if she had not decided and really wanted to perform live bad here, the history might be very different, Drew.
Yeah, it could be a very different situation.
So she did, she came, and everybody rallied, and what happened? How did it get saved?
God bless her. She was, I mean, really a pivotal moment there. And at that, around that time, Gaylord came in. Gaylord, who owns Gaylord Opryland, Gaylord came in and invested about $8 million to refurbish the outside of the building, modernize a lot of things. This wall that's right here behind us wasn't here. There were no real backstage facilities. There was no catering room. There was no production office. There were no elevators back there. There was no air conditioning. So they really brought this building into the time that it needed to be while keeping all the historic features. These pews we're sitting in have been here since 1892.
Amazing. So those who have gone before us, we can almost touch them.
Yeah. Can you imagine who has sat in these pews? And we hear lots of stories. You know, Reba will tell a great story about how she came here before she started her career, and she sat up in the balcony and watched a show. And Johnny Cash came here on a high school trip, and that's when he first laid his eyes on June, and he was sitting right upstairs watching the Opry. So, I mean, it's on both sides of the pews. It's very exciting.
That is so cool. So today, what happens? What sort of performances? And does the Grand Ole Opry ever come back for a special show?
Yeah, the Grand Ole Opry comes back in the winter. They also come back for a limited run of shows called Opry Country Classics. But they come back in the winter and do their shows here. It usually starts in November. It'll go through January. We call it Opry at the Ryman. It's fantastic. But beyond that, we still do 200 concerts a year. We also operate a daytime tour. So hundreds of thousands of people come through on the daytime tour sort of as a pilgrimage to see this iconic place, and an equal number come at night to see concerts every year.
Give us an example of some of the live performances that showcase here.
We have everything. I mean, this week, let's just talk about this week. So the other night we had Steven Tyler made his headlining Ryman debut. We also had a Guy Clark celebration that Emmylou was on, and Rodney Crowell, and just a whole cast of artists. Later this week, we've got a comedian appearing. We've also got Toto coming. We're doing, next week, we'll be doing the ACM Honors Awards, which are the off-camera version of their awards, but this year it's actually on camera. It'll be on television this year, so that's real super exciting. We have all kinds. I mean, anyone you can think of has probably played here, or we hope they will soon.
That's so cool. For further information,
Ryman.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at the Ryman, and that's me behind the tweet, so send us a tweet.
Awesome. I'll tweet you back.
Thank you.
Lisa Ann DuPont, it's been a pleasure to visit with you. Thank you again.
Thank you.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom.
Rockin' and rollin'.
All right.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Nashville, Tennessee. Right now we're at the Johnny Cash Museum in the heart of town, and we're with Angela Dotson, Director of Marketing and Events. Hi.
Hi.
How cool to be here. As you know, we both have a little connection with the Cash family.
Yeah, a love for Johnny Cash, absolutely.
So tell us, why is this here? And
yeah, this was created by, the founder's name is Bill Miller. He was a personal friend of Johnny Cash's for many years. He started out as a fan. As a child, he would go to the concerts, got backstage, got to meet Johnny in June. They used to call him Little Billy Miller and bring him backstage, and it just grew into a friendship. He and his wife Shannon actually created Johnny Cash Radio, where people could go online and listen to Johnny Cash 24/7, and people would say, I'm coming to Nashville. What can I go see? Well, the House of Cash Museum had closed down in Hendersonville. The house had burned down. Really, the only thing that was there was the gravesite. So Bill had all this really great memorabilia and all these things, and he thought, we need to move to Nashville, and we need to set up something to honor Johnny in a town that he influenced so much. So that's kind of really how this museum came to be.
And tell us a little bit more about Johnny Cash's physical connection with Nashville. This is where he primarily came to record.
Johnny has great ties to Nashville. He did the Johnny Cash TV show right around the corner from where we're sitting right now at the Ryman Auditorium. You know, he lived in Hendersonville, which is just 30 minutes from where we're at. He actually, you know, there's a great story about how when he was getting started, he and Waylon Jennings were roommates together in Madison, which is also very close to Nashville. So he's had ties to Nashville for a very long time.
Very, very cool. And so again, he did most of his recording sessions here too.
Yes.
And where did that take place?
You know what? He had different studios over the day, so I think that just kind of changed from time to time and recording the recording.
Crazy. I'm crazy for feeling so lonely.
The destination is also going to house Patsy Cline's memorabilia.
That's right, yeah. So we are getting ready to open the Patsy Cline Museum, and hoping mid-October for that to happen. So construction is literally happening as we speak right now.
So and before 2017, the doors
will
open.
Yes, it will be up and running before 2017. And, you know, we want to honor the legends and the people who made Nashville what it is. And, you know, Patsy Cline definitely, she's really country music royalty, so.
So she, too, did a lot of her recordings here and live performances here.
Yeah, she had a very short career, but a very moving and obviously very influential career. So we're really excited to be able to honor her and get some of the stage costumes on display, some hand-signed pieces, some really cool interactive things in that space as well.
I'm crazy for trying, and crazy for crying, and I'm crazy for loving.
For those who don't know, what happened to her in the
She actually passed in the early 60s in a plane crash, which was unfortunate. She was right at the height of her career, had some amazing hits with Walking After Midnight and Crazy, and she was only 30 years old when she passed away.
It's amazing how many up and coming musicians blow up in the air.
It's sad. It really is. But, you know, it's amazing how her legacy has lived on so much since that time.
Yeah, interesting. Anything you want to add, Angela? Now's your time.
Just come see us at the Johnny Cash Museum. We'd love to have you here. A lot of really great interactive things for you to come and see, and love for you to come see us at the Patsy Cline Museum when it's open as well.
What are some of the coolest things, the memorabilia that you love, that you're attracted to?
My favorite thing is we actually have an in the studio where you can go and mix Johnny Cash's songs. And you can actually, if you want to pull up and listen to just the drums that were on the track, or just listen to the background vocals, or the amazing thing is you can turn all the other instruments down and just listen to Johnny Cash's voice, and you can hear him take a breath in between his phrasing. I mean, that's amazing to me. As a true Johnny Cash fan, that's probably my favorite thing.
That's so cool. Thanks again.
They're probably drinking coffee and smoking big cigars. Well, I know I had it coming.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com. Our associate producers from the San Francisco Bay Area include Molly Blaisdell, Lori King, and Susie Rodriguez. Melissa Corbin reporting from Knoxville, Tennessee, Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Elaine Masters in San Diego, Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon, Rebecca Bingham, Hot Springs, Arkansas, and Steve Cook contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.
Oh, my blues, oh.